A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
El 27 de marzo a las 6 en el Centro Comunitario.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it's, of course, Bathrop's Piers Broadsides, Thursday evening show. Stay tuned for this and that and maybe a little bit of the other.
I give thanks you came along my way, but it's hard 'cause you don't always stay. But if I could, I'd fly like a hawk in lazy circles. Eyes would be in search of you, and in the sunset of the reds, yellows, and purples, I'd soar just to be with you. I'd try to get through this life anyway. Easier with you. You guide me on my way. I don't know how you do it. It's you that helps to see me through and through, right through me. And I give thanks you came along. But it's hard 'cause you don't always stay. And that's why if I could, I'd fly away from here, far from this world of limitation. But if I did, I'd have to leave you behind. You're my inspiration. You're my inspiration.
Yeah, that was a little of Opal's Son. This is Free Radio you're listening to, in case you've forgotten, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. Call-in number here is, as ever, 831-427-3772, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. And, of course, we've got a 15th anniversary celebration coming up. Can only find where the damn thing is on the board. I think it's a week from Saturday, March 27th, I believe. Boy, that's a week after the 7th anniversary of the criminal invasion of Iraq, a historic and hysteric moment. So anyway, yeah, I do invite you to call into the show. We're going to be listening to a couple of things. One is more from the Rotkin Matthews new medical marijuana dispensary ban vote, the unanimous vote, that passed City Council Tuesday before last and is coming up again this Tuesday for a final vote. This kind of prohibitionist stuff masquerading as regulation is happening in other cities too. So, for instance, Scotts Valley, according to today's Sentinel, for those who like that particular title, our local paper In the extra section, Section B has an article, city leaders extended a moratorium on medical marijuana dispensaries on Wednesday and asked staff to revise proposed rules for backyard beekeepers. Actually, most of the article is about backyard beekeepers. The medical marijuana dispensary decision extends a 45-day moratorium passed last month for another 10 months and 15 days. It's exactly what the Santa Cruz City Council did last July, saying that they were just trying to examine the situation more closely. Actually, they're stalling and banning at the same time, and it sounds like they're using the same kind of ordinance, though I think... I'm not sure if it's a county zoning ordinance or a state zoning ordinance. It requires there be some kind of health safety emergency, health safety or welfare emergency, I believe, some phrase like that, that allows them to suspend the application process, which they did in Santa Cruz, and then, of course, Tuesday before last, eliminated it entirely for any new medical marijuana dispensary seeking to open. It's medical marijuana prohibition. It's reefer madness, folks. It's the same stuff we were fighting decades ago. Now, the liberals, the Rotkins, even the Tony Madrigals are going along with this crap. Although Madrigal, as we will hear, actually did make a few proposals, but then went along with the crowd. Sort of similar to Don Lane's asking a few questions, which, for example, Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and another, I'm not sure if the Human Rights Organization did too, if it was still around, but homeless advocates asked Don Lane a year ago, when, before the new anti-homeless laws were passed, to really require some statistics and find out what's really going on. He asked questions, but then he voted along with the crowd to expand the forbidden zones where homeless people, all citizens, all members of the community cannot sit down. But, of course, only those who are poor or young and don't have space elsewhere will want to sit down there, like on the sidewalks, like near buildings, like use a bench for more than an hour became a crime. To get three infractions, such as, a sitting down ticket, maybe a smoking ticket, maybe a sleeping ticket. You get three tickets like that, that becomes a misdemeanor at the preference of the city attorney. And then, they can put you in jail for up to a year for defying the decorum rules, in essence, of the city council expanded to Santa Cruz, where basic constitutional rights no longer apply to poor people. You're not allowed to, even if you're not engaging in criminal behavior, if you're sitting down next to a building on Pacific Avenue or in any other business district, that is now a crime. Has been a crime, actually, since 1994, but they've expanded the zone in their constant creep to get rid of the unsightly homeless, to give the police greater selective enforcement powers, to give the merchants and the bigots who want to get rid of people the opportunity to use a very peculiar citizen arrest power that the police are allowing them to exercise with unbridled discretion. I'm finding that out. I went to court today to deal with the sinister political song ticket that I got on the 6th of January, and I'll talk more about that later in the show. But in any case, Scotts Valley has passed a moratorium unanimously, which means no medical marijuana applications for another 10 months. Apparently they banned it for 45 days. There's no explanation in the paper as to why they required another 10 months, what they were studying. They just decided, screw these potheads, we'll ban it some more. And that was the mentality of, the 50s and the 60s, and I thought we'd gotten rid of that one, but no. It's going to require a whole new effort, though it's possible that the state voters in November may vote in at least a somewhat limited legalization of marijuana, still leaving people in jail for this absurd so-called crime, but at least having the effect of eliminating the charge for possession, sales, transportation, cultivation, and so forth. But anyway, what I have here today, and I was playing it before, part of it, and getting rather bored with what I was hearing, was the last, Tuesday before last, Santa Cruz medical marijuana dispensary discussion. I suppose I could try to track down the Scotts Valley one and find out if they are as oblivious to the law, unconcerned with the needs of medical marijuana patients in their area, as compliant to the bigots and NIMBYs in their community as Santa Cruz is. And that I don't know. I haven't heard their city council. And last time I was at a Scotts Valley City Council meeting, it was to fight their sleeping ban that they were putting into force, unsuccessfully, of course. I think it was 2 or 3 years ago. They have a nice police chief up there. He's a nice guy, but he recommends nasty laws, kind of similar to Mayor Mike Rotkin here in Santa Cruz, who kind of masquerades as a liberal, is on the board of the ACLU here. But, you know, scratch him on a homeless civil rights issues, and you find someone who supports a sleeping ban, a sitting ban, a panhandling ban. And I use these phrases somewhat liberally because it's not entirely a ban on panhandling if you sit 14 feet away from a building, if you aren't doing it after dark, if you aren't in a group of two, if you aren't within, I think it's 50 feet of a change-making machine. And there's a whole series of endless restrictions which narrow down the places where you're allowed to hold up a sign that says, need money for food, and do nothing else than that. Now, I talked to Sergeant Harms last night. Too bad I didn't put that on tape. We had a long chat about a number of things. And he was telling me, see, we've got panhandlers downtown. We never bother. And that never isn't true. They do get bothered, and they get bothered regularly. They get moved along from tiny safe zone to other tiny safe zone at the whim of people who have more money than they could even dream of because they don't like the sight of them nearby. You know, they're afraid it might stop the customers from coming in to visit their knick-knack shops. But they are severely restricted, and they face essentially a ban at the insistence of a police officer whenever a police officer wants to move them along, regardless of the law. And those of you who've heard the interviews that I've played on free radio twice a week, I do this show, have heard, I think, credible accounts of people who've told you that the police and the hosts don't respect the laws. They would simply kind of make it up as they go. I mean, if you happen to have a copy of the law with you, if you have a homeless advocate standing nearby, if you really want to take the risk of getting a citation, having to go to trial or jail or lose your property, then, you know, maybe you can make a stand, maybe they'll back down. But often it's the word of the police officer, regardless of the wording of the law. And I saw this most recently, or at least I heard this most recently, in a credible account from a guy who was seated sort of near Aqua Blue, if you know where that is, on Pacific Avenue. It's a bit up from Pizza My Heart. There is an area on the sidewalk where it's legal to sit. It's 14 feet away from all these obstructions. It's a tiny permitted zone among all the forbidden zones. But that didn't stop a cop from pulling over, according to this guy, and jacking him up and insisting he move, even though he showed the guy the law. He said that the same officer the day before, I believe it was Officer Winston, could be wrong about that, but I believe that's my recollection, had told him he could sit there. And the same officer the next day said, no, you can't. So it's really, this is sort of a license for petty vindictiveness or just petty abuse of authority is really what it is. And that's one of the reasons these laws are just bad, need to be changed, need to be reformed, need to be thrown out, need to be ignored, need to be fought. And that's what I've been trying to do for 2 decades and will continue, I imagine, to do. Tomorrow there's going to be an event at the courthouse at 8:30 in the morning. There's going to be what I saw termed on Indy Bay as a belch-worthy breakfast. It's going to be a meal by Joe Schultz, probably not going to be an extensive meal. We're thinking like probably coffee cake, maybe something else, for folks to come on down. And essentially it's an encouragement to support the 2 homeless musicians who are being dragged into court by City Attorney John Barisoni for 3, count them, 3 instances of allegedly sleeping or covering up with blankets during the day. Now, normally that's not a crime. Even in Santa Cruz, that's not a crime. It's only a crime after 11 o'clock at night on public property or in your vehicle. But in this case, they're claiming that they intended to remain overnight. Apparently, you have some telepathic police officers who know the score, so they came
at 5:45 in the evening, saw them there with a blanket, perhaps trying to catch sleep at a legal time when it's legal to sleep, but not legal to sleep with the intention of remaining overnight, and then decided that they were intending to remain overnight and wrote them up for that. They weren't convicted of that. They were just written up for that in a police report. Took those reports to the city attorney, and the city attorney is tomorrow at 9 o'clock in Department 4 before Judge Volkman, trying to make these criminal offenses. I guess they're not even calling them criminal offenses. They're calling them public nuisance violations that will then make these two have to go to jail for 15 days each, pay thousands of dollars in attorney's fees, and do 240 hours of community service. All without any kind of real trial, just on the basis of police reports for things that are not even a crime under the absurd Santa Cruz code, unless you want to take these officers' claims at the face value, that they can somehow intuit that someone's going to be staying overnight if they're sleeping during the day. If we're in that condition, then we actually do have a 24-hour-a-day sleeping ban, and that, I've heard Vice Mayor Coonerty and Mayor Rotkin say that, you see, we're different than Los Angeles, that where the courts overturned the sleeping ban, and we're different than San Diego, where the courts overturned their sleeping ban, and we're different than Laguna Beach, or where the courts overturned theirs, or in Richmond, where the city council voted a different law, because, you see, we allow the homeless to sleep during the day. Well, apparently not anymore, under City Attorney Barisone's new sneak around the Constitution yet another time. And he's bringing homeless people into court, into a civil process where they don't have the right to an attorney to be appointed for them. They don't have the right of an appeal. And they don't even have to be convicted of any kind of crimes. They just have to be accused of it by police officers. Interesting situation, which I hope you will be present to observe. They need all the support they can get. That's tomorrow, 9 o'clock at Department 4 at 701 Ocean Street. That's the county courthouse. It's the flat building next to the five-story building right across the river on Water Street. You'll also be invited to a meal if you want to come down. That's going to be at 8:30 in the morning. And India Joe Schultz, Jumbo Gumbo Joe, as I call him, because he makes a really, tasty hot soup. And he's made it available on a number of occasions to Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom activists, and those who they're feeding. Yes, in the very bowels of the belly of the beast, and the bowels too, I suppose you'd say, on Pacific Avenue, where we attempt to advise people. We were advising people this summer I was advising them not to patronize certain shops who supported this absurd injunction and actually allowed their declarations to be added to this series of police department sleep crime claims that were made against Anna Richardson and Miguel de Leon. Those were Bunny Shoes, Lulu Carpenters, I think Borders was also involved. We encourage people to, Palomar Hotel, I think, was involved, to steer clear of those businesses and to actually patronize businesses that put up a little sign that said, we support the right of homeless people to sleep, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere. Civil rights for everyone. In other words, not just those who have money, not just those who are the targeted customer base for the merchants, as they struggle to blame the Depression on poor people downtown and get the police as their own private security guards in doing so. If you have any thoughts or comments on this, you can give me a call, 427-3772, or you can come on down tomorrow. We're going to have not only a meal at 8:30, there's going to be a speak out. A congressional candidate, Ed Fry, is going to be speaking. He's also the attorney defending Robert Blind Bear Facer, who will be facing an appeal under the sleeping ban that he was convicted of in the court of Kim Baskett about a month or two ago. Also, Jonathan Gettleman will be speaking. He's the attorney who will be defending Anna Richardson in the proceeding tomorrow at 9 a.m. in Department 4. And we may have a couple of other speakers. I may actually stand up and sing one of those songs that I'm being accused of violating the law by singing downtown on Pacific Avenue in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz back in January, to give you a taste of the kind of crime that really Rome's Free on Pacific Avenue. You can hear that's a downtown song. You've actually, those of you who are regular listeners, have heard it before. And it's kind of a nice version of the Petula Clark song, which I think adds a lot more meat to the lyrics than what she started out with. It's sort of the happy, feel-good, la-la-la-la elevator music kind of song. And then it became, under our sinister lyric substitution, a way of holding the police department, the downtown association, the city council, and the other bureaucrats to account for the kinds of criminalization measures they have imposed on the poor people of Santa Cruz. But it's a little bit off to the side here, because I was originally talking about the medical marijuana dispensary ban, or I'm sorry, moratorium, a 10-month moratorium, in the interests of public health and safety, undefined, of course, at least the Sentinel writer, that magnificent scriptster Genevieve Bookwalter, who sort of passes on police department press releases without too much critical commentary. So that's what I've found. She writes this so-called story in today's Sentinel about the Scotts Valley extending potshop moratorium. I'm going to go online and see if I can find something more about that. But this is tape from the city council in Santa Cruz I'm going to be playing. And in fact, probably want to make a note or two about what went on a little bit before this. I played a bit of this tape before. It's a pretty boring staff report, the one I was playing by Mike Ferry, I think his name is, who he's from the planning department. He's one of the original geniuses behind this ban all medical marijuana applications. And I don't want to even repeat for the nth time my objections to it, though I probably will anyway. I did take some notes on his claims and his presentation. What they're fundamentally doing is they're looking at bans in other cities and suggesting that these are reasonable so Santa Cruz can do the same. That's what Scotts Valley is now doing with its ban, it looks like. In fact, bans on medical marijuana dispensaries or limits even on them are not really reasonable unless you're putting limits on other businesses. Now, it may be that I haven't heard of other businesses and that have bans on them. Maybe there's a limit on the number of alcohol establishments you can have within a certain distance of each other, but not within the city limits of Santa Cruz. Similarly with pharmacies, similarly with orchid-growing areas or other areas that grow plants. So to have a specific category for medical marijuana obviously suggests that they regard this as some kind of a specific danger. But they've not been able to adduce any danger that's come from medical marijuana clubs in the last 4 years, except perhaps the danger of having overpriced and profiteering kind of activity go on there, which they're not really addressing anyway. So all they're doing is they're banning all new medical marijuana dispensaries in Santa Cruz, in spite of some hopeful words by Mike Rotkin and Don Lane some months back in the Good Times, or perhaps the Santa Cruz Weekly, formerly the Metro, saying that we might have three or four dispensaries rather than two. They supported, too, unanimously, in banning all the rest, keeping the same monopoly or duopoly of Greenway and Limekiln, the two existing medical marijuana dispensaries there, and banning all other ones from opening up. So, and they did this again on the rationale that, well, other cities are banning them, you know. Those other cities don't want them niggers around, so we're not going to do it either. You know, we're just going along with the crowd. You know, they don't get down to the substantial reasons, the substantial justification, even under the very ordinances that are supposed to govern the right of an applicant to open a business. They had to claim there was an emergency to suspend that right, first for four and a half months, then for 10 months, then for another, then for 6 months, then for another 4 months, and then to ban it entirely, to ban the right to apply for a medical marijuana dispensary, a new one. So and they added a 600-foot setback in residential zone areas, decreasing the amount of space to a kind of dot-sized space on a city map. Well,
spit size space, perhaps. There are only two places, a tiny area in Harvey West and a tiny area over in the industrial section on the west side of town where a dispensary could theoretically open, but now it's illegal to apply for them anyway. I mean, it's not illegal to apply, but they're not going to take any applications, so I guess it would be senseless to apply. They've banned consideration of medical marijuana applications. There was no explanation from Rotkin or Lane why they changed their mind about this issue. At least there wasn't in the part of the city council debate that I heard. Now, I've got to admit, I have been so, I've been kind of consumed with other matters this upcoming hearing tomorrow of Anna Richardson and Miguel de Leon, attempt to, you know, send them to jail for sleeping without even a criminal conviction. It's kind of taken up my time. And you can read more about that, by the way, by going on to Santa Cruz Indy Media, indybay.org/Santa Cruz, indybay.org/Santa Cruz, small letters, all one word. And I've written about it there, and you can check it out. Or you can come on down tomorrow at 8:30, have some breakfast, or at 9 o'clock, and check out how the court, I guess the court of Judge Volkman, is going to handle this situation. So I've been busy with that kind of stuff, as well as other things, and I have not had a lot of time to listen to the entire hour of essentially posturing by the city council, giving token time to people to speak about the matter, and then ignoring the concerns that are brought up. Let me say this. It is my prediction they will be ignoring the... I can't imagine that they dealt with those concerns, but because I didn't see it in any news accounts. I didn't hear it from anybody who was there. But as I said, I haven't listened to the entire discussion. So let's be fair to Herr Rotkin and the merry members of the city council and suggest that maybe they brought up some new dangers that the medical marijuana dispensaries might bring in that none of us were aware of before. You know, I mean, you know, you do know Take Back Santa Cruz is running around finding drug dens in the Poganip, blaming homeless people for it, and demanding more police activity around the drug prohibition war. So there may be all kind. Maybe there's a link now between marijuana and heroin we didn't know about. That could be, huh? You know, maybe marijuana leads to meth. That could be, you know, or we'll find out, no doubt, some surprising facts as we enter the Alice in Wonderland. We thought we were in the 21st century, but we're actually in 1953 in Santa Cruz world. And by the way, if you want to talk about this yourself, again, I remind you, the call-in number here is 427-3772. So, and there was debate on the canopy size. They're going to limit the canopy size to 2,000 square feet. I think Limekiln requested 10,000 square feet, but they're going to limit the grow area to 2,000 square feet. They didn't actually do a study of how many medical marijuana patients there are in the county. They couldn't find an official number, so they took the study done by, I think it's Stuart Krieg, maybe the other applicant who tried to apply last summer and then got essentially slammed with this sudden so-called emergency moratorium. They were trying to show, look, there are a lot of people who need to be served. It's not unreasonable to have more dispensaries open. We're going to be opening one, you know, near where, you know, in an area where there are like four or five wine shops all within a relatively limited same area of each other, yet we're being castigated and we're being, you know, defamed as, you know, a public menace. But these, you know, boozeries are just peachy poo, you know, are just great, are just peachy keen, I should say. But maybe it is peachy poo. I don't know. There were some interesting points brought up in the staff report, which I posted online about 2 weeks ago, right before the hammer came down on the final vote by the Rotkin Council. It's not the final vote, actually. It's the initial vote. But the initial vote is really the final vote because they don't change these matters in the second reading. They will always say, oh, we'll try it for a few months and change it later, and then they never do. That's their procedure. And also, they held their session, as I mentioned before, in the afternoon rather than in the evening, so people who wanted to come who had perhaps jobs were not able to make it. And they used the fact that it was squeezed onto the afternoon agenda as a pretext for giving people only 2 minutes each to speak. You know, I recently won this Ninth Circuit agreement to rehear whether I have a right to a trial on the issue of whether I was falsely arrested at city council back in 2002 for raising my arm in a mock Nazi salute after the chair threatened to arrest a woman who was simply trying to speak at oral communications during her speaking period. I didn't disrupt anything, but the chair decided to have me arrested anyway. I didn't leave.
I said, no, I'm not going to go. And, I hope
I can hold this thought. But, you know, you can hold a thought, but you can't hold off the public.
So let's see who's calling in. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hi, Robert. This is, I almost said my name. This is an anonymous caller.
Hey, anonymous. I reckon. Let's give you a pseudonym so we can actually, you know, identify you for our FBI files. What do you want to call yourself? Give yourself a name.
I'll have to come up with one. I want to say that I was deeply, deeply disappointed when I watched the YouTube of when you did that.
Hang on a second, caller. I'm having a little trouble hearing you. Are you? Maybe talk a little bit further away from the phone. Maybe we can hear you then. Go ahead.
Can you hear me now?
That's a little better. Go ahead. Hello? Hello? Oh, boy. Well, I'm sorry about that. Yeah, you were distorting there. So try calling back, and I'm not sure whether it's your phone or whether you're talking too close or our equipment's gone kaput or is having some problems. But please, do try call again. I, you know, like to have people calling in, and, you know, my voice is wonderful, but yours is probably more important than mine because, you know, you don't get a chance to talk in the way I do. So don't be shy. Call back. Oh, boy, there we go. Let's see here. All right, let's try again. Hello, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is Brian. I almost said my name again.
You're anonymous, and you almost said your name. Blew your cover
I'm
there.
I'm not good at being a sleuth like you. I just wanted to say that I watched the YouTube of when you were arrested, and I was deeply, deeply disappointed because I was expecting you to be yelling, screaming, jumping up and down.
Well, I probably should have been.
And I was really disappointed. I wanted to see you do something. I wanted you to live up to your name as, you know, Santa Cruz's most favorite villain.
Man, it's boring, isn't it? I mean, it's boring, boring, boring. You know, it's all you do is you see me kind of greet this woman that the mayor cut off. I give the, you know, a quick, you know, Heilkron silent salute right in front of the police officer who kind of looks bored. And I turn to talk to her, at which point, you know, all hell breaks loose because Councilmember Fitzmaurice wants to make an example of me before the community that you're not allowed to make a, you know, you're acting like a bunch of Nazis silent commentary at city council. That's not permitted.
Yeah, and I also thought, you know, just as being a woman, I see that it's all white males. That's what I saw in that video. I'm not saying that that demographic is currently in place. It was all white males. They like their power. I guess I don't want to be too radical or conspiracy theory, but I didn't really see you do anything that was disruptive. It might have been insulting to them, but you're, you know, buck up. No one's, not everyone's going to like your politics. So if you can't do a silent
criticism.
Body language, I mean, I don't understand. Yeah. I really didn't understand why you were arrested.
Yeah, well, I was arrested because the mayor said to Sergeant Baker, who is the sergeant at arms, arrest him. And they actually couldn't figure out, first they couldn't figure out what to arrest me under. If you follow that video, it kind of continues the course of the arrest, although that was not covered by community TV. We just happened to have a journalist there, Becky Johnson, who happened to do the video. I mean, I didn't expect to be arrested. I expected to be able to speak on items later that night. That's why I didn't want to leave. You know, so.
Well, I just wanted to say that when I saw you sit down when they asked you to leave, I was really proud because I know that I'm not in a position of power to make that kind of a stand. And I appreciate that you chose to do that because I would love to be someone that could do something like that, but I don't feel like I could without jeopardizing my household. And I was really proud that there was someone who did that. And you were calm, and you were very, very calm. And I think that when I saw the way that you did a peaceful protest, and when I watched that video, I thought it was a great example of a peaceful protester. You were arrested, but you never used violent language or violence with your body.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you saying that, caller, because there are a lot of people who, two people in the last 12 hours have denounced me, one driving by in a car, and the other, an employee at the county building, walking by for, you know, shamelessly wasting the city's money with this business. And, you know, it's actually good to hear people understand, at least hear one person, you, describe, you know, you understand that this is a matter of the right of the community to take a different point of view to the council and to express it in a non-disruptive, but obviously a fashion they don't like, but that's not really the issue. You know?
Exactly. It's not about Robert North and, you know, how he bugs their, you know, city council and local business owners. It's not about, you know, radical politics. It's a very simple, basic, you know, right that we should have, that we can attend city council meetings and express ourselves in a non-disruptive, non-violent way, and that the city council cannot selectively choose who they kick out based on personal opinions.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's it. And see, they had tried a variety of other tactics before that to shut me up.
I've been there, and I've seen that happen to you different times when they. I think you're the reason why we have that 2-minute rule.
Yep, I think so too. And, you know, and it's interesting. I mean, it's interesting how you can get blamed for this stuff. So, for instance, some people have said to me, "We have a sleeping ban in Santa Cruz because Robert has been, you know, publicly opposing it for so long."
I mean,
which is a strange kind of, you know,
however,
logic.
It wouldn't have mattered.
No, and I think, you know, I think it is true that, I mean, I'm pretty much of an individual critic. I mean, I've got a few people who agree with me. We do a little protest tomorrow. We're going to be at the county building, and you're invited to come anonymous, if you'd like.
I will, and I'll let you go, but I just wanted to say that, you know, I don't always agree with you either, Robert, but I think that the thing for me that's important isn't whether or not I agree with you, but that we advocate for the poor people in our town.
For sure.
And I think that most of the time I agree with you, and sometimes I don't. And I'm okay with not agreeing with you. I don't feel the need to arrest you or dismiss you from a room.
Well, feel free to call in when you disagree with me, too. I mean, that would be interesting as well. So.
Yeah, I will next time.
Okay.
All right, well, have a great evening. Oh, I was going to also tell you that right now we can't stream you live on the Internet.
We're not streaming?
No, the website won't come up at all.
Oh, that's...
So, but it's no big deal. I just wanted to let you know.
Well, that's important because it means we're going to have to archive the show differently. Thanks for letting me know about that.
Yeah, I can hear you on the radio, but I can't hear you. I can't do it through the Internet.
Well, that is a bummer in the summer, as I'd like to say.
All right. Have a good evening.
Hey, thank you.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
So, phone lines are open. 427-3772 is the call-in number. And... yeah, I mean, the real issue is public access to city council, even on issues like the medical marijuana dispensary ban, the new one that they were voting. And I was describing here what went on, at least my perception, what I did see of the city council meeting, which was afterward. I was watching the tape. The city council, the current dispensaries have been forced by the city council, have some peculiar rules, or maybe it's not entirely clear whether that's required by the city council or whether they do it themselves, but you cannot have a card for another medical marijuana club if you have a card for Lime Kiln and or Greenway, the two clubs that do exist, according to their policy manuals, which are online if you want to look under the story that I wrote on Indie Bay about medical marijuana. So it's kind of strange. I mean, so that means not only are they given a monopoly of existing business now because new clubs can't even be applied for, but if you want to go out of town and buy something, you're not allowed to have a card for their club. Or if they find out, you will be banned. And not only will you be banned, city council, I think, has required them to send a letter to state authorities denouncing you as a bad medical marijuana patient. I don't know what kind of impact that would have. I don't know if that's been done. I haven't heard any reports on that. But it's, you know, it's a kind of punitive bullshit that it was a part of the, I believe it was a part of the 2000 ordinance that was passed by city council that essentially stopped all medical marijuana clubs for 5 years. Didn't stop WAM, but WAM isn't a medical marijuana club. It's a collective that's pretty closed and pretty much serves only its own very ill members, or so they say. So, again, we're talking about the discussion. This was the staff report and discussion of their rationale, which didn't show really there was no real basis for anything. They were doing the act as though it was very reasonable. They were doing a very close examination. But it was all kind of predicated on a false hypothesis that you somehow need to limit medical marijuana dispensaries. No rationale was shown for that. The only thing they kept saying was, we got all kinds of application phone calls last spring after the federal attorney general Holder said that you know they weren't going to prosecute folks under federal law for growing marijuana, and they still are, of course. So it's not really that true. But apparently, that has had an impact in other cities. There have been more applications, which I would think that enlightened people, including you, would hope the people that are getting paid big bucks and the staff to cook up these laws might appreciate. They might say, "Well, finally, we're getting a rational response to, you know, the crazy drug wars that have been, you know, dragging us down for the last five decades." But no, what we're getting instead is this, we've got to go back to the 50s here. Oh, we better stop. No more medical marijuana dispensaries. Oh, we saw it was being restricted in other cities, so we better restrict it too. This is really backwards thinking. And it's also repressive thinking. In a city where marijuana busts for all marijuana use have risen, I think it's by 30% or 40% in the last year. I kind of spoke briefly with Attorney Ben Rice about this earlier today, and he's agreed to come on the show and talk about this issue in a month. He's got a busy schedule. And you have, in the city of Santa Cruz, increased busts. I don't know if they're prosecuting, but busts for possession of marijuana. That's according to the Measure K Commission's own stats. I've denounced the Measure K Commission because they don't look into whether these busts were the lowest priority for the police department. They just take their word for it, which is ridiculous. You don't need a commission to take the word of the police department. You need to investigate the reports and see if they're in fact doing what they say they're doing. That's what the point of it was. The city attorney went to bat, earned some money for himself, and pleased the police department, which is really, in spite of how liberal you may think the Santa Cruz Police Department is, still afflicted with a reefer madness mentality. They don't like marijuana. They really don't. And it's just... anyway, that showed itself for sure in the medical marijuana dispensary discussion. I guess one of the more positive things about the discussion was Vice Mayor Coonerty left the room and stayed away. I'm sorry, I don't mean to seem mean to Ryan Coonerty, but it's hard for me to find anything good to say about anything he's done on the city council. I'm sure I probably could if I worked at it, but every issue that comes up, from his crazy parking lot panic law, which has made 25 city parking lots and garages off limits for people to sit and read a book in their car in, or chat with a friend in, or if you're homeless, to try to sleep and get some shelter from the rain in. All these things are illegal because of Ryan Coonerty's law and the city council that endorsed them. And he's also supported the sleeping ban. He's supported other anti-homeless laws. He's opposed the education cuts up at UCSC, and so is Rotkin. Anywhere that it doesn't concern something where they have some power over what goes on, like in their own city council, these people are as liberal as can be. But when it comes to places where they have to worry about pleasing the real estate developers and the downtown association, the police department, and the conservative staff that really runs the city under city manager Dick Wilson, then you see the different face of Rotkin and Matthews and Madrigal, Okay, let's give Madrigal some credit, though. In this discussion, he did want the meeting to be held in the evening, and we're going to actually begin this long-delayed tape from the City Council's Tuesday before last meeting on the new medical marijuana dispensary ban issue now. And you're going to hear Rotkin and Madrigal arguing. And I'm glad to see Madrigal is trying to press for something. I'm sorry to see that he didn't, carry it through by voting against this thing at the end.
We would held this hearing, even if it's the first reading of the ordinance. I was hoping that we would hold this hearing in the evening, and so...
And this is the voice of Tony Madrigal, for those who don't know him. He's a council member, and he's asked, instead of being on the afternoon session, to be the evening.
We're here for the public, just to give the public an opportunity to give input since they're here already. But, you know, I just want to share, I mean, I intend to make a motion. I hope I get support to table this first vote to another meeting where we can hold this in the evening so we can have more people from the community, working people, be able to come.
You can try that motion anytime you like.
Wanted to put that out there.
You can try that motion anytime you like. So we're now going to open this up to the...
And that's Mayor Rotkin.
And unless you want to try it now.
Look, I was going to say, I'd like to make a motion that we table this item to an evening meeting, hopefully the next meeting in the evening.
It's not debatable except for the time that it's being suggested to. Is there a second for that motion?
Huh?
You had a question? Dies for lack of a second?
I'm sorry. Don had a question about my motion.
No, you're done. The motion's a procedural motion. You didn't get a second. It's over. Now we're going to hold public testimony on this and move forward. Those in... That's what we're about to do. He tried to put it off.
You can let him explain it.
Notice what's happening here. He shuts down the council. He shuts down Madrigal by saying, we're not going to have any discussion. He's using a parliamentary tactic, but he's showing disrespect for a member of the city council who had a question about the motion. And, you know, Madrigal raises, Don Lane had a question. The council member had a question. Can it be answered? And you see Mayor Rotkin using the same kind of forceful, I don't want to say dictatorial, but it is pretty imperious. You know, he's not going to allow any kind of side lining of his agenda. And so who steps forward? A member of the audience risks being banned from the chamber by speaking up. That would be considered disruptive behavior because she's not a member of the council. She's a member of the public who actually should have more power than the council because the council is supposed to be the servant of the public, not the master. That's the reason that all these repressive measures at city council are fundamentally wrong. That's the problem with that. Anyway, you can't hear her speak very well, but she's wanting to hear. Why can't there be, you know, some discussion of this? She obviously wants there to be some kind of movement of this whole thing to an evening agenda where more people can attend. Let's hear what happens.
He made a motion. His motion died for lack of a second. Parliamentary rules are when your motion doesn't get a second. Excuse me, you're out of order.
I just had a quick question, though. But did you have a question for me about the motion, or?
Well, I was just...
It's not a debatable motion. That's...
Two council members are trying to get clarification. Rotkin is interrupting.
When you make a tabling motion, it stops all discussion. The council either votes it up or down. If it doesn't get a second, you don't even discuss it. Those are the rules of the council. We're done. Unless there's four votes to overrule me. And I'll take a motion for that, if someone wants to do that.
I was hoping that you would afford us the courtesy of being able to ask each other questions.
That's not the way it works. We basically have a hearing. These people have come for the hearing. We're going to have the hearing. We're going to hear what they have to say, and then the council's going to respond to what they tell us.
Notice the kind of slimy approach. He doesn't take responsibility. He's doing this on behalf of the people in the hearing, where the people, the only person who's spoken out from the audience, wants this issue to at least get a little discussion at the council hearing, or at least the question from Councilmember Lane to be answered. And instead, Rotkin, of course, drapes the mantle of the great populist around himself. But, of course, it's exactly the opposite. Also, I want you to notice that Madrigal didn't speak up until a member of the audience gave him the courage to speak up because she risked the same kind of treatment that I got in 2002 and an arrest by this mayor in 2005 when I was actually assaulted for the first time by the Santa Cruz Police Department back when I was at the microphone trying to speak for 2 minutes and being told by Rotkin, you can't, and I stood there waiting to, you know, essentially have them arrest me and then leave peacefully, but make the point that they are violating the rights of the public. Instead of being arrested, I was grabbed, wrenched, and I kept asking, am I under arrest? Am I under arrest? Finally, I was told by Rotkin, yes, you're under arrest, after my arm was wrenched by Captain Clark, who dragged me outside and then proceeded quietly to threaten me himself off to the side. denouncing me for involving him in the earlier lawsuit where he was also a part of a repressive city council process, but not in the violent way that he was in 2005. So you're hearing, again, the Santa Cruz City Council, Mike Rotkin, suppressing even council, reasonable council discussion about when to have a, whether to move this to an evening session. He obviously, it's on his agenda. He wants to have it now. He could do all kinds of things other than this. He could ask the members of the community how many people want to come back, you know, later tonight. He could have a brief discussion at City Council about it. Instead, he cuts short even the discussion. He did this in 1996 when three council members tried to suspend the sleeping ban over the winter. He refused to allow it to even to be discussed. He had the motion tabled and dropped without a discussion. This is the kind of parliamentary machinations that Rotkin uses and has used over the years, I think, in defiance of... Well, in a way, it's, he can claim he's simply following rules, but he's disregarding what would seem to be a reasonable process.
Try and put it off. You tried and it failed. We're done. So now this is the opportunity for the members of the public who want to come up and tell us anything you'd like about this proposed ordinance, changes, the issues of medical marijuana, and so forth. Those are all on the floor. Please come up. You don't have to give us your name, but we encourage you to do so just so people know who's speaking. Please come up and share your thoughts.
Time limit, Mike?
My name is Don Dibble again, and I just, this whole marijuana issue is, to me, it's insane. It reminds me of the Salem witch trials, the Inquisition. I mean, we've got this persecutorial mentality that runs loose in our world, and all kinds of people get hurt as a result of insane laws, and I myself have suffered greatly as a result of marijuana laws. I haven't smoked any in over 10 years, but that's a separate issue. And I also happen to think that I believe pretty much in the free market. I don't believe in, and I also believe better in no government than bad government. My father thinks I'm an anarchist, but I'm not. I believe in, you know, rules of the road and things like that. And we have to, but I think in regards to marijuana, my solution would be to let it grow. I know you're not going to go for that. So what I'd like to say is I would like to see more than two dispensaries in town. I mean, because you kind of create a monopolistic situation where collusion and price collusion, et cetera, it makes it just too easy for guys to say, oh, okay, well, let's jack up the price here, let's jack up the price there. And Lynn's question about, was it reasonable compensation? I mean, Enron thinks $20 million a year is reasonable compensation. Where are you going to go with that? I mean, I could go on for a long time about some of my comments on this issue, but your parking police are going to prosecute and persecute me if I don't go move my car. So I'm just going to leave it at that. And I'm sorry I have to miss a lot of this conversation because I'm sure it's going to be interesting. Thank you.
That would be public works employees, not the police, probably. But
So, you know, here's a member of the public saying he wants the meeting at night. And, of course, he also opposes the the ban on new medical marijuana dispensaries. Let's hear more.
There'll be a ticket and a persecution.
Hi, my name is Suzanne File, and I serve on the board of directors of WAM, the Women's Alliance for Medical Marijuana, and I'm a medical marijuana patient. And in general, I support the city's efforts to regulate and put out guidelines for the dispensaries. And while WAM is not a dispensary, I would really like to ask the city council to take into consideration to not do anything that would impinge upon WAM's ability to serve the community now and in the future. Thanks.
Thanks for your comments.
And this really is pretty damn shameful. This is what WAM has been doing for the last, 10 or 12 years. All they've been concerned about are their own interests. You do not hear a WHAM. Now, maybe there'll be WHAM members who come up will take a different view than Susan. I know Susan. She's a nice person. You know, it's not a personal criticism of her as a human being. But this idea that marijuana should be, it's okay to introduce a prohibitionist mentality everywhere else as long as you don't, you know, injure WHAM. Don't, you know, not in our backyard. You know, don't mess with us. Go ahead, screw over the rest of the patients who make up the majority of people who are medical marijuana patients in Santa Cruz who can't be WHAM members. This is really kind of sickening. It reminds me of what happened in 2002 where WHAM piously got medical marijuana from the Crone Council in this public demonstration of, you know, oh, see how liberal we are. We're giving out medical marijuana to the WHAM patients. But this is the same council that made it essentially impossible to open a club for 5 years so that the great majority of medical marijuana patients couldn't be served. And WHAM said nothing about this. Valerie Correll had no words. Mike Correll had no indignation. Now, I believe both of them are speaking at this hearing, so I'd love to hear that they've changed their position. That would be great. Let's hear more.
Other members, please come up.
Hello, I'm Mike Correll. I'm the co-founder of the Women's Alliance for Medical Marijuana. I'm generally in favor of regulation. This is a burgeoning industry, and like any industry, there will and should be regulation. However, one thing I would like to address right now is Table 1 and Table 2, the square foot and possible yields from the square foot. I've been cultivating marijuana for close to 35 years. I'm also a cannabis expert witness at court qualified in the state of California. And I have testified up to 25 times in the court system in Santa Cruz in opposition to the Sheriff's Department expert witness. And in every single case, the Sheriff's Department has grossly overstated the yields in grow situations. And in every single case, the charges were either dismissed or reduced because of the overstatement. And their estimates in Table 1 and Table 2 are grossly over what they should be or what the possibilities are. The other thing is, I'd like, Lynn Robinson, you talked about this reasonable wage. I think the way to deal with that is to peg the wage to the production cost of the product. And I think that would be a way of keeping it in line with what's reasonable and allowable. And those are my comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sorry there, Mike. I'm not applauding, both for Mike Rotkin and Mike Correll. While those are interesting comments, and they also show the bias of the city staff that cooked up this crazy scheme, which I call it crazy because the whole drug war is crazy. We know it's crazy. It's abusive. It's crazy. I'm not even going to go into it. But to have the city council piously sitting there and taking these stats from the sheriff's department, at least you're getting Mike Correll correcting that, and that's nice. But you don't see him opposing this attempt to make sure that only two clubs remain open henceforth in Santa Cruz, two marijuana clubs. No. This is a fundamental abdication of responsibility on Correll's part, or else... His concern about, you know, I think appropriate wages. I'm not sure if wages are paid to WHAM members. I think they're all voluntary workers for each other, but I'm not sure. And there's, you know, I've heard criticisms about how WHAM runs and so forth, and I've even played them on the air. But in general, of course, I support the right of the Corrals and WHAM to have their, you know, their operation. And I commend them for standing up to the feds. I only wish they'd use some of the political capital they have to stand up to Mike Rotkin, to stand up to Mike Ferry, the guy who cooked up this planning commission report, to stand up to the bigots in the community who are backing this, to stand up to the Santa Cruz City Council on this issue. And he isn't doing that. And I'm sorry. You know, you cannot be, you know, the marijuana hero if you're not going to defend the rights of everybody. If you're just going to defend your own little piece of turf, it ain't good enough. Sorry, Mike.
Let me
Hello, my name is Valerie Corral. And
Tip down,
okay, there we go. Thank you. My name is Valerie Corral, and I'm the co-founder and director of WAM. And I just wanted to address a few issues. First of all, WAM is Santa Cruz houses the longest-running medical marijuana organization in the nation. We're beginning our 18th year in this community. And I also wanted to address a market study that was done, that the Santa Cruz Medical Marijuana Market Study, which I would completely disagree with, just based on answering the phone in my office, that 670 patients, then we're taking care of, you know, just our collective alone would be taking care of more than a quarter of those patients. It's not possible. So, I mean, I think that I don't know where that originated, but I could stand up here and say it's 3,000 then. You know, it's just simply not a fact. Also, I wanted to address the inclusion of dispensaries as a caregiver, and I think you need to look at 6.90.085, page 2, number 8 and 8B, and the designation as a caregiver by the state. It needs to be readdressed or revisited. So I won't go into it because I only have 2 minutes here, but I think that's something that you can look at. Storefront dispensaries is on page 11 of the following. It's at page 11 of the AG's guidelines of SB 420. I sat on that commission for 3 years and was a commissioner. And that issue, while it is has been unclear, has also been visited by a recent Supreme Court hearing in the Mensch decision. So before, it's either better to not include it or to visit it in a different manner. Did you have a question?
No.
Okay.
Just
so,
trying to follow you.
Okay. So I'm kind of running through quickly here. And
your time is up.
My time is up. Okay.
If you have written materials, you can submit them to the council.
And that is Rodkin's constant refrain that justifies his two-minute time limit. If you have written materials, you can submit them. In fact, she was trying to rush through a series of concerns that, as the person who has run the longest-running marijuana operation in, you know, probably the United States, maybe not, but, you know, certainly in California, I don't know, 18 years, they'd want to listen to something, particularly if she points out that the figures that the staff report are giving are absurd, that there are far more patients involved, and hence a greater need for medical marijuana facilities. What do you get? You get, you know, it's crammed into 2 minutes, and it's a nice way of ratifying really quickly what the staff report is, which is to ban all new medical marijuana dispensaries. And people who want to change that, whether it's a council member, Tony Madrigal, or other people who want to speak on it, Rodkin cuts them down, cuts them off. That's it. I guess the facts speak for themselves on this. Anyway, back to Valerie Corral.
Mountain. They're sort of a hodgepodge, but thank you.
Thank you. Other comments?
The sad thing here is that Corral and the audience allow Rodkin to get away with this kind of stuff. You know, I mean, that's why we have the corruption of the political process. Because the Congress has been allowed to get away with making war on innocent countries, innocent in terms of any aggression against the United States, for the last decade. That's why we have the biggest military budget in history. That's why we have the hugest prison population in the world per capita. So we have all these things because people don't stand up and speak out on what's going on here, on the lobbies that the police department and the prison guards have, on the huge military industrial complex. They are silent because these bodies and the corporate interests that support them have learned to use the parliamentary rules. They've learned to buddy up to the Mike Rodkins and the Cynthia Matthews and the Lynn Robinsons. And what we get is this kind of parody of the public process.
Just don't shout out, Mike.
Hi, I'm Lisa Molina of Greenway. Most of you know me.
Okay, here's another shill coming up. This one's a private entrepreneur and profiteer, Lisa Molina, who really was the sweetest, kindest voice. She was in the studio repeatedly as we tried to get her club open and succeeded in getting her club open. Hers was the first ever medical marijuana club in Santa Cruz that wasn't, you know, the one that was a closed club that served only its members. But after that, she never returned phone calls. She was, you know, she was gone. And I want to hear out what she says, because I haven't heard this particular testimony from her. But in the previous testimonies that I've heard, she does not object to this monopoly procedure. She does not say there should, you should allow other clubs to open up. Come on. You know, you got no good basis for doing that. What's the health and safety emergency? I mean, let's just talk sense. You know, I mean, what is the mythology here that is constraining us to even have this item on the agenda in the first place? There's nothing here. They had two applications that were completed that certain neighbors did not want to go to through the very strenuous application process where they might have been turned down anyway. Because it's a very difficult thing to open up a medical marijuana club, was even before they put this ban into effect. So we heard that Valerie Corral had nothing to say about the rights of other people to get medical marijuana, which is kind of unfortunately consistent with her position over the last decade. You know, I got mine. Valerie, shame on you.
I didn't expect to speak this evening, really, until I saw the language change of 6.9. The original version I was showing was asking for a CPA to do a report yearly that would go to the city council and the city manager, which I fully support. The documentation that you're asking for here puts us in a really open, vulnerable position with our patients, I mean, for our patients. I think there's a lot to be talked about in that. And the ASA, the Americans for Safe Access Director, Don Duncan, wished to come and speak to you tonight, but he's already scheduled in Palm Springs because, as you all know, there's a lot of this going on right now. But when this originally opened to limit, when the planning department opened this to limit the dispensaries, it's been like a, I don't know, witch hunt, maybe, on the two dispensaries that are open here and operating without complaint or issues. I don't see you asking the homeless shelter. I don't see you asking Goodwill or anybody else that's a nonprofit to supply this amount of information, which will cost us a lot to keep a daily run of these numbers because it changes. So I see it causing cost. I see it exposing patients, dispensaries. I don't mind supplying the information, but I'd rather do it to a qualified public accountant, not to city officials who might not have an understanding. I love all of you. I'm not against you, but I would like to just see it done in a proper form. So I just ask that 6.9 be reworded, that a certified public accountant could certify us yearly as being not-for-profit. Thank you.
I have a question. So you're referring to the proof of democratic control and the proposed language that Councilmember Lane was proposing, right?
Yeah, some of that is
quarterly meetings.
That was just dropped here tonight, but majority of, I mean, when you've got 4,000 patients or even 1,000 patients and you ask for a majority vote, you're asking for a lot of, gosh, that takes a lot of people, takes a lot of time. To try to come up with that. And the director of ASA would tell you that most of them don't even care, nor do they want to be involved in it.
You know,
they just want to get their medicine like they would at a pharmacy and go on. I'm not against it. I'm just saying it's, you know,
One of the things I wanted to throw out there, because I mean, I read that too, and so some organizations that I'm familiar with, they usually include a majority of the voting members present at a meeting. And then that way you don't have to have a majority of your 4,000 patients, just those that decide to show up. And technically you did open it up to your membership, et cetera, in an effort to be democratic. However, you're not requiring 50% plus one of your 4,000 members to be there, for example. So what about the quarterly requirements to report? I'm just curious, like how, I mean,
is that doable? It's a quarterly meeting of members of a collective or cooperative. A lot of these, this what I'm reading here, is something that a cooperative would do. Collective is not actually defined under state law. It's kind of a floating thing, but it's trying to be defined through all this process with the dispensaries right now, which I'm thinking it will happen eventually. But for now, this just talks about the voting of quarterly and financial. That's, you know, a nonprofit does have some, you know, rules for their nonprofit financial reports. We've actually filed for our California nonprofit status, which I've not heard back from the state yet. I know that WAM had their nonprofit status taken away, so some of these requirements may not even be possible.
So I guess my other, that brings me to another question. Like, for example, if we were to, if this was reworded to say quarterly meetings of your board or your executive board or decision-making body?
We have three members. Like, as a nonprofit, we have a three-member board of directors right now, but we discussed with Americans for Safe Access how would we, you know, do that if we needed to do a vote. How do we get that? You know, they suggested staying away from it because it, and they, Don Duncan would like to come and talk to you about that himself, but just because of how many there are and the different counties they come from, and so how do we as a dispensary get the right vote? But I was like, do we get a patient board of directors together? And I was told that that could work. So this is stuff to figure out. Is it like a percentage of those patients? Do we give them a paper when they come in to vote on? Do we hold a meeting to vote? There's a lot of that question because there's not a definition for a collective. Now, we're willing to conform and do almost everything. Some of the stuff I would want somebody else to talk to you about, somebody that's more qualified and has seen what's going on in the whole state. In Los Angeles, their ordinance requires their dispensaries to give a CPA report once a year. I think that's, you know, should be sufficient because it's a state-run certification. You know, we'll see if we actually get this nonprofit certification. I'm hoping we do, but, you know, if the state's calling out for it, then they should give it. I don't know how many have or if any do, but we're trying. We're in the process right now. That doesn't change much. It's still going to be taxed, and it's still going to... So it's a hard place for a business to be. That's all I can say.
Okay.
So, Lisa, just I just want to be clear. So what you're Lynn asking
Robinson,
for is just under the annual report requirements where it says city manager, you'd like that to be like LA's
CPA, whether it's city picked or not, doesn't matter.
Okay, but that's where you're asking to insert that difference.
Well, yeah, that whole 6.9, that's what it, originally there was a change that I was sent to me by the planning department that had that exact wording in it. Mr. Ferry asked me how I felt about that, and I said it's okay. I already have a CPA to make sure I'm compliant because I don't want to be closed. We've been open for almost 6 years,
okay. And
when we opened, it was scary to be open. So we needed to make sure everything was in a row so we didn't have the IRS or the state board or anybody coming down on us. So I'm not afraid of the reports. I just want it to be a qualified person to review them because unless you understand how a dispensary works, you might... I might be misunderstood or seem out of line. So that's what I was asking.
And that's where I'm saying you want to insert CPA where we have city manager.
Yeah, or that 6.9 become, it could be a one-sentence thing, which Mike had at one time,
okay,
which showed that a CPA would qualify us as a nonprofit.
But that's not who does it. It's, excuse me.
Well, the state would do it.
Here.
Would that not be true? I mean, the city doesn't do that normally. This is a state thing. And that's what I'm asking, is the city qualified to be looking at these?
Now, this is kind of like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, to use a cliche. You know, she's concerned, you know, about how, I don't know, the requirements for reporting so that, you know, I guess having to do with profiteering and making sure it's a real patient-run or patient-responsive group. And there's nothing wrong with that. But there's no criticism whatsoever of the fact that she... and Lime Kiln will be the only clubs allowed to exist. Now, you get a little, perhaps, let's be generous, she's simply scared, quote, I don't want to be closed. Maybe that's the motivation instead of, boy, look at all the money I can make if Lime Kiln and My Greenway are the only clubs open in town. Whoa, you know, they have to come to us. We can, you know, roll up our sleeves and bathe in the bucks. You know, I mean, who knows? It's kind of hard to tell. And it's also kind of disrespectful to the public that the city council members don't clarify for the community watching this on television and listening on this particular show, anybody who's listening to the audio of it, what the hell they're talking about. You know, I mean, you have to go back to the staff reports and look at 6.09, which, admittedly, on this, because in this particular situation, I have not done. You know, but the fact is, it's not really the major issue. The major issue that Molyneux, the Corral's patients, and other activists should be bringing up is the thing that Don Dibble brought up earlier, which is, why is any of this necessary? What is the public need to shut down any new medical marijuana dispensaries? There's no objection to this. This is a profound corruption of not just the politicians in power, but the advocates who are supposed to be defending the rights, standing together against the drug prohibition war.
I'd take it to the state if you want. I just want to make sure it's a qualified person so there's no misunderstanding.
Great.
Thanks for your comments. Other members of the public?
In other words, you know, me, my club, I want to make sure my club survive. That's it. Her club has survived just fine for 5 years. You know, instead, what we're getting now, you know, she like the Corrales, could use some of her, you know, her prestige, her experience to say, we don't need this, folks. It's a bad idea. Don't do it. But either she's too greedy or too fearful or, frankly, I don't want to say too stupid or ignorant because that sounds like I'm simply castigating her without reason. But I just do not understand why she cannot take a position that would allow other people to do what she has done. Open a medical marijuana club in Santa Cruz.
This is Mr. Kriege. He contacted me yesterday and asked for 5 minutes as representing the organization. You can have 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mayor Rockin and council members. I won't take a whole 5 minutes. Respect to everyone here. My agenda is I'm the third applicant, and I would like to see a third possible dispensary, so I'll state that out front. The ordinance looks pretty good. I think there's a little hypocrisy when you say you don't want over-concentration and then the ordinance actually concentrates it in one limited part of the city. I think that's a problem. Besides that point, I think the major issue is there is no enforcement procedures at all with if the two dispensaries are compliant or not compliant, and what would be the procedure for Santa Cruz Patients Collective if they did want to get a new facility where they could take advantage of the new ordinance? Would they go back to the line, or would they have some sort of grandfathered position in their application for a new site, since Councilmember Byers asked and was said that it's site-specific, not entity-specific? So that has a lot of bearing on our application, because we were kind of in the impression that we were entity-specific, that we spent, you know, did $25,000 worth of work on the operations manual, and did all that work, and the address and the $1,000 we spent on the blueprints drawing and the parking lot stuff, that's just a mere small percentage of what our whole collective and organization is about. It's not so much about the bricks and mortar, but the time it takes to legally prepare and collect everything and make sure we cross our T's and dot our I's. So question is, how do we enforce it? Is it just, okay, you give the report annually once a year, and then the following year, if the report doesn't match the report the year before, then, little question in the mind, and then at the third year, oh, well, now we got some anomaly because we got 2 years worth of reports. So we're talking 3 years here, and, you know, my answer, you know, my question to Mike Ferry was, what's this enforcement? He says, well, you know, nightclubs, we get to revoke their special use permit if there's a problem. Well, what is the complaint? So there's not been one complaint on any of these dispensaries. So when we limit it to two, we are, whether we want to admit it or not, we're saying, we're making a judgment that these are bad. We're making a judgment that more than two or more than one is a problem. And yet there's no facts of any problems. And I think actually having a third one would be a solution. Instead of trying to ask these operators who've done nothing but operate responsibly, professionally for 6 years, almost 18 years, and, you know, and they've done nothing wrong, and we're going back after them, and what we could do is we could just say, everyone from here on out, these are the new rules. And as part of us getting our application, we'd have to agree to those rules as opposed to challenging them whether it's legal to even impose them. So I think we're kind of going backwards a little bit. I think this limiting it to two is a slap in the face to the medical marijuana community. I mean, I see it as Jim Crow and nothing else, and I'm not trying to be inflammatory, but You know, it's been back of the train, back of the bus, and now we're back of the city. And, you know, we've gone from criminals to second-class citizens, and I'd really like to be appreciated members of the community and be seen for what we are, as people trying to be professional, trying to bring stability to our lives, trying to pay taxes, trying to service the community and offer something to our fellow community members. So that's it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
That's a nice speech, and of course it sounds a little like what I was saying, but notice he doesn't say there shouldn't be a ban on medical marijuana dispensaries, period. He says, my application for a third dispensary should be granted because that way we can all kind of be on even terrain and, you know, we can all, you know, he uses the right arguments that will be applicable to multiple dispensaries, but he only wants one more dispensary open, his. He isn't making a broader argument on this. He doesn't because he's afraid of maybe being too far overreaching, or because he really does honestly only want his dispensary open. And like the Corrales, like Lisa Milano, and we haven't heard yet from Ken Sampson of Lime Kiln, they're looking out for their asses, and that's it. And I suppose you might say, you know, the interests of their patients and their clients. Although really looking out for their interests would mean providing them with a wider set of opportunities for where to purchase medication. And also the de-demonization of marijuana, because what they're colluding in here is the mythology that all this is somehow a sensible, important, and necessary proposal, which it is absolutely not.
Good afternoon. Hi, my name is Kenny Aptegrev. I'm a West Side resident. I am against the portion of the ordinance that limits to two dispensaries. Essentially, what you have right now is you don't really have two dispensaries. You have one. You have two dispensaries that are within a quarter mile of each other. They charge exactly the same prices. Okay? In essence, it's an oligopoly. Hopefully, I pronounced that properly. A market form in which an industry is dominated by a small number of sellers. Okay, another famous oligopoly is OPEC. Essentially, what we're doing here is just we're creating a little mini marijuana OPEC over there at Harvey West. Okay, that OPEC sets their prices. You know, whether they're doing it, you know, going over next door, I'm not going to accuse them of that because I have no knowledge of that, but it's just coincidental that they have exactly the same prices, which essentially are double street prices. So when I see the city attorney present the numbers for their customer database and it shows them in the hundreds, what that tells me is that there are literally thousands and thousands of people that are still forced into the underground market. Okay, they can't go out to these dispensaries and pay for their, you know, overly expensive product. So they are forced to go into the underground market. So you have these grow houses that are operating illegally. They exist. And what this is doing is allowing them the opportunity. If we create another source where they can go get their product cheaper, some of these people will come out and operate legally. Okay? They will pay taxes. They will legitimize some of these illegal grow houses. Okay? What we're trying to do here is bring them up so they can operate like upstanding members of the community. Okay? Who can't afford to go out and pay double or triple what they're paying now. Thank you.
Thanks.
Hi. I'm Annalisa, and I'm not against medical marijuana, nor am I actually personally against legalizing marijuana. That's not...
Annalisa is the co-founder of Take Back Santa Cruz, a group that I've talked about on the air before, which has rallied citizens around public safety issues, and to some extent also, it's been our fear that they have been rallying them around against panhandlers and people downtown that they don't like the look of, and marijuana dealers who are, you know, the bane of Santa Cruz, we know. You know, there have been there are concerns about, you know, heroin sales and heroin use and meth sales and meth use. And they've done cleanups in the different parks, and that's fine. Cleaning up the parks is fine, provided you're not cleaning out the people. And that has been the issue for me with Take Back Santa Cruz. Let's hear more what Annalisa has to say.
For me, the point here. Having a third dispensary, and also, too, I'd like to commend the two dispensaries that are currently in use and their, you know, their safety practices and things like that. But adding a third dispensary isn't going to bring everybody from the underground. Street marijuana is always going to be cheaper than medical marijuana by the way that it's grown and the quality of the marijuana. City Council is not here to discuss whether or not marijuana should be legalized. The bottom line is that it's not legal, and all the cities around us have been saying, no, thank you, no, we don't want to extend our dispensaries, we don't want to have more dispensaries, we don't want to have any dispensaries. And my concern is that I don't want Santa Cruz being the fall guy like we are every time, saying, oh, well, we'll even have more. We have two. We have 56,000 people. When you break that up, that's more per person than almost any other place in the United States. So we have 25% of the people right now are local. We're covering our local community. I like some of the compassion things that are being added into this, making sure that that's what it's about, that it's about the compassion to the patients and not about making money. That's my main concern, because once you start doing this, then how are you controlling who's coming in? And you can call Los Angeles and find out who's running a lot of their for-profit dispensaries. And I'll tell you right now, it's not all up and up legal. So let's, you know, whatever the rules, if you guys can work it out with the dispensaries that are in use right now. If this is a small town, if you're a patient and you live on the west side, you can drive to Harvey West, walk to Harvey West, stroll to Harvey West. You don't need to have one on the west side, in the neighborhood, east side, anywhere else for that matter. Two dispensaries is enough.
Thank you.
It's nice to hear Annalicia speaking for patients that obviously don't feel she represents them. I mean, I can't believe they would. She makes a number of allegations, you know, that bringing that a new dispensary will not, you know, bring prices down, which seem kind of counterintuitive. If she has some evidence of this, like she indicated that she'd gone to other cities, seen new dispensaries opened, and that didn't bring down the prices, I would say, oh, that would be interesting evidence, and that, you know, I'll have to consider that. Instead, she makes these assertions which seem fundamentally grounded in a prejudice against and fear about marijuana generally, in spite of her claim that she supports the existing clubs, which is kind of, you know, the holy writ. You have to say that. And I put my hand on the Bible, I support WHAM, I support the existing clubs and all that sort of thing. But in fact, if she got a chance to close them down, I kind of wonder what she'd do. All cities around us, if they don't want dispensaries, that's not relevant to what Santa Cruz... sorry about that. I think I've been talking in the wrong mic. And I think that's what this caller may be telling me. Hey, caller, are you going to tell me that I'm screwing up on my mic? Caller? Sorry, go ahead. Hello?
Robert, you're on the wrong mic.
I thought you'd be saying something like that. Thank you very much. And that was the helpful but sometimes brutal Uncle Dennis. So we'll be coming on in about half an hour with From the Cream to the Dregs. And actually, I'm on the right mic, but I'm on the wrong. I got the wrong button. But now all is well. So you too can call in, and please do what Uncle Dennis did. If you see me doing, if you hear me doing, or you hear me not doing, please let me know so we can actually continue this discussion, or at least I can continue my tirades. I'm really sorry that we aren't. This is not going out over the internet, apparently, because it means it's going to be a while before I can get this loaded up and available as something you can download as an archive. And I think it's important to hear this, frankly, crap that's going on at City Council. Most of it is crap. It's a series of fears and a series of pandering to fears, which you would have thought Santa Cruz was beyond, but of course it's not. That's why it may be important for people to show up en masse at what Rotkin says will be a nighttime session next Tuesday at 7 o'clock for the final hearing of this. Again, I don't want to encourage anybody in a way to do this, because the Rotkin procedure has always been to have any substantive discussion at the first reading of an ordinance, not at the second reading. So I don't know what's going to happen with this. Santa Cruz being the fall guy? No, Santa Cruz being the city that is the beacon rather than the darkness around these issues. Also, it's a smart business decision. We've seen that people coming to Greenway and to Lime Kiln have not created problems for the city. They presumably have created profits. Although, you know, we have this concern about profiteering, which I understand. I also understand that I guess I'm more concerned about marijuana being demonized than, you know, cutting off Lisa Milano's Hawaiian vacations. I'm not terribly happy with stories I've heard about how she proceeds, but I have no evidence of her, hard evidence of profiteering going on at those two clubs, in spite of statements by people like Anita Henry that she has. I'd like to see the hard evidence. I have seen a sad lack of general concern about the rights of medical marijuana patients to have more alternatives from Lisa Milano, from Valerie Correll, from Mike Correll, from the city staff, and certainly from Alicia, or whatever her name is, I'm sorry, Ann Alicia. I'm sorry to sound so cranky about her, but I just didn't like what she said, and I don't like what she's doing with Take Back Santa Cruz, generally. People need more alternatives, not less. People need a saner view on marijuana, not more fears and prohibitions and phony, bogus restrictions just because the next city does it. And by the way, San Jose is actually opening more clubs, so she's factually wrong about some of this, too. Her claim that that 25% of the clients are local means the local people are being covered doesn't follow at all. It means that a lot of people are coming in to get marijuana, but it doesn't mean at all that local people are covered. They may be. They may not be. No study has been done of that subject, either by, even though the Planning Commission and the Planning Department actually has had, and the Planning Commission as well, what is it, 10 months to do such a study or to do some kind of research. They've done absolutely nothing other than sit on their hands and ratify this prohibitionist document that passed unanimously Tuesday before last, and is coming up for a final vote next Tuesday.
Afternoon. Hi, my name's Cheryl Eason, and I've never spoke like this before, so I'm nervous. I'm with WHAM, and my son, he passed away in 04. He was a very brittle diabetic, and he went into WHAM at 2000, and they didn't think he'd see the year through. They helped me make him live until 2000 with their medical marijuana. And they said it saved his eyes, it saved his liver, it saved him because he could eat, and it kept him off of the Dilaudins because he wasn't in so much pain. He passed away. I was injured in a car wreck. I tried to be a patient. They wouldn't take me. I was not bad enough. I didn't have their criteria to be a medical marijuana patient. Time went by. I finally made it. I got there. And I'm accepted as a patient now. But I still had to go to a doctor and get, you know, pay $150, get my medical marijuana permit. But I could have walked into any Gilroy, any place. Here's my permit. Give me my medicine, and walked out. They didn't care what was wrong with me. Here's your list. What do you want? I go into WHAM. What's wrong? What's your symptoms? What do you need? What are you on? And they tell me, well, this will help you with this. This will help you with this. Why don't you try this? This will help you with your headaches and seizures. And it really gets my goat, talking to country girl, that people that have a 9-to-5 opening door hempery or whatever you want to call them,
your time
stand
is up.
Up here for 10 minutes, and Val walks up here with legal concerns just like everybody else, and you slap her down and say, your 2 minutes is up. I don't think it's fair. And I'm a taxpayer, and I'm against it.
Thank you.
Of course. Of course, we also don't hear her opposing this measure, which is really the issue. I mean, if Valerie Correll's group had opposed this measure, I think members of the city council would have had some trouble voting for it. But for some reason, St. Valerie and Archangel Mike didn't want to do that. You know, we didn't get to hear them opposing this measure. We didn't get to hear, you know, Goddess Milano opposing the measure. We only got to, and the only reason that the applicant for the third club spoke was to support his own application. With this kind of really narrow, very narrow self-interest, how are we going to get together to,
you know, to fight an increasingly huge law enforcement establishment that is again, raising the number of marijuana busts each year. People, we have to look out for each other on this issue. You have to stand on the principles on this issue. And so far, this isn't being done by any of the folks who are, you know, who've been riding the gravy train on the medical marijuana. And I include the Corrals in this, in spite of their work. You know, they got a lot of prestige, a lot of mileage off medical marijuana. A lot of it deserved, no question about that. But their public positions have not supported the expansion of medical marijuana in terms of its local implications. And that is just sad.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Ken Sampson of the Santa Cruz Patients Collective. There's so many different directions I could go with this. With a couple minutes, it's not really enough. We are here to serve the patients. We're not making a lot of money. There's so much propaganda and finger-pointing going on that we don't really have the time and place to defend ourselves on it. You know, this one gentleman was talking about the OPEC syndrome. Well, basically, when you have a product you buy at a certain price, you have overhead expense, you pay your employees a living wage plus benefits. That's what it's going to cost. We can't compete with the guy on the street who buys it for the same price, sells it for the same price, and I hope you get my point. My whole thing is, you know, the proposals of accountability, I'm for that. You know, the more regulations you give us, the more we can be in line, more we can be defended, and we do the proper job. And so there's a couple of options. Mr. Barisoni's thing, it made sense to me, except for the caretaker thing. I think it's already been thrown out with the Minch case. But my whole thing, what I'm here for, is if you read Attorney General Jerry Brown's guidelines, it says for the security and non-diversion of marijuana grown for medical use. You know, so we're all stuck in the gray area if we're not allowed to grow our medicine. We can't keep up with the organic value of it. So that's what I'm here for. If I could answer questions or help you understand what we're trying to do.
Well, I have some questions for you about the
Tony Madrigal,
the grow space, because you know, as you saw in the report, it's saying that you're asking for that you think an adequate amount is, or that you need 10,000 square feet of floor space to be able to grow. Could you just tell, you know, why, from your experience, you had an indoor facility that I went to go tour? I mean, why do you need 10,000 feet? What could you do with 2,000 square feet of plant canopy grow space per square foot versus just plain floor space? Like, could you let us know some of the differences? Because it is a wide range of pounds produced that they're estimating. So,
well, you know, Mike said, those numbers are so unrealistic, I can't even approach them. I mean, I don't know any illegal or legal growers ever who've come even anywhere close to those numbers. So those are just fictitious numbers. They're just thrown at us, trying to make us look like we're bad. We're trying to do something illegal. You know, what I don't get is that, why do you think if you give us an opportunity to serve our patients better, are we going to do something illegal? If you assume we've done something legal all the way up until now, why would you all of a sudden think, well, if we give them a chance to have control of that, take it out of the gray area, now they're going to be crooks? It's just not going to happen. That's not reality. But square footage. In Oakland, I emailed all of you, I hope you all got it, that I was responsible for Oakland. I was trying to help a fiscally ailing dispensary over there. And we had 14,000 square foot of grow space, 14,000. And we had probably two-thirds the patient base that Santa Cruz Patient Collective has. And we weren't growing enough medicine for that. It's not like an illegal grow where you're going to have a plant every square foot. I mean, on the walls. I mean, that's not what it's about. We have to be ADA compliant. You know, a wheelchair needs to be able to go down the aisles and be able to reach in from the wheelchair far enough to service plants. I mean, you know, as you know, the ordinance states that our employees have to be patient members. They have to be card-carrying patients. So I can't say, okay, you're in a wheelchair, so you can't come work for us. That's not a possibility. So if you do the math on that, that's 50% of your floor space right there.
So you went from 14,000 to actual 7,000 of actual plant grow space?
Well, not even less than that, because there's operational areas. You have curing areas. You have processing areas. I mean, this is not just like you know, illegal grow, you imagine you go into a house and every square inch is plant. This is not it. You know, we have classroom areas. You know, we have research areas. You know, we have strain areas where we try to develop new strains, you know, for the patients because there's so many strains have so many different effects. And so, you know, when I talk square foot, I'm talking about someplace we can go in and do a professional job and serve our patients, not grow millions of pounds. You know, we, of course, like in any sensible thing, we're going to be governed by guidelines. You know, there are state mandatory minimums that are in question right now in SB 420, but there are state mandatory minimums, and it'd be easy to regulate us based on that. We would never have more than we need. We're not selling to the black market. You know, we are taking care of our patients. And the big thing about cost, you know, I really noticed this past year, since I've been in, it's been my goal to have highest quality medicine for the best price. Okay, you're fighting the black market for this medicine. It's reality. You know, so there's when it's supply and demand, when there's more demand than supply, the price goes up. And we still had to cover all of our operating costs. And so that's going to be the price of the patient. And what I've noticed this last few months, there have been such an over... Right now, there's 30 new dispensaries in San Jose. So things are happening. And there's a lot more competition. There's a lot more growers with the relaxing the laws. And so we saw the wholesale price on product drop 25-30%. And that saving got passed straight on to our patients. So you can imagine if we took the profit out of it completely, handled all the growth ourselves, you know, how our patients could benefit from that. You don't have that gray area of profit. You know, it's basic expenses. Your employees get paid their living wage, benefits, and there's their patient members, and so it makes everything inclusive. There's no gray area. We're all completely governed.
So with the 2,000 square feet, I mean, with the 2,000 square feet of only floor space, how much of that would actually be grow space? And, I mean, how much do you estimate you could actually produce versus if you had 2,000 square feet of plant canopy space, I guess is the term?
Well, see, what you had to keep in mind is that it's not just there's several different
year,
phases.
By the way.
There's, you have to have mothers to make clones.
Right.
Clones to grow up into plants to flower off, in other words, to make the fruit of the plant, which we consume. So you would have to have nearly half of your space for flowering you would have to have for all the phases that come up to that. So it's not like you just have... Okay, now you're down to 1,000 square feet. It's not like you have 1,000 square feet of bloom. This is something that it's a process. And so really you're knocked down. A 2,000 floor square foot is going to equal about 500 true square feet of bloom space.
And how much does that produce? Like, I mean, does it produce enough for, what, a month's worth?
No, even close. And the biggest negative thing is you'd be so constricted to only be able to grow a few varieties because varieties don't necessarily like to grow together. They have different needs. They have different hormones they put off, and it affects the plants differently. So really you'd be able to grow maybe one or two varieties in this space. And then what about the other 15 varieties you want to have for your patients? So it limits us. It takes us backwards rather than a step forward.
So I guess my question is, so if it was limited to just 2,000 square feet of just floor space, not the plant, you know, bushel
canopy
space, then would you grow it or you would just not even use that?
Well, I wouldn't have the option. I have zero grow space at Santa Cruz. All I could do is have a place to have clones for the patients that I had to buy from vendors.
So the best that you would use it for would be just to grow little small clone plants for folks to grow their own at home.
Correct.
Or try to. I know everybody doesn't have a green thumb. And
that's what I want to have classes for, so we can bring everybody up to that level.
Oh, okay. I probably want to ask some of the same questions to the other dispensary. But I think that's all for now.
Thank you.
Of course. Thank you.
And that was Ken Sampson answering questions from Tony Madrigal, the council person. This is the Tuesday before last city council vote that ratified a ban on all new medical marijuana dispensaries, but allowed the two existing medical marijuana clubs to have limited grow house facilities on site. The issue will be coming up again next Tuesday at city council. I actually was looking up the city council agenda. And on Sunday, when I come back at 9:30 in the morning, I will hopefully be talking some more about this issue. If anybody has any comments, now's the time to make them, 427-3772. That's the time to call in. Looks like there is a 7 o'clock meeting, and the issue on that is the medical marijuana
dispensary issue, item 20. So that's going to be happening. And there's not much new information that seems to be in the city council, staff stuff. In other words, this is the rubber stamp vote that's going to go through, unless lots and lots of people show up and say, "What the fuck," you know. But I don't necessarily anticipate that's going to happen. I do hope, however, there'll be lots of people showing up tomorrow, because tomorrow I'm going to be Joe Schultz is going to be serving some breakfast in front of the courthouse at 701 Ocean. We're going to have a little speaker's platform, probably a stool, where people can stand up and talk about issues. Congressional candidate Ed Fry is going to be talking about his upcoming congressional run. You know, such things as actually ending the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, maybe providing real health care instead of this horse shit that's being shoehorned through the Congress by the Obama corporatist Democrats, as Ralph Nader calls them. And an interesting discussion and exchange that Nader had with Dennis Kucinich today on Democracy Now, for those of you who want to check back and look at that. I was going to read the Gettleman Declaration, which he is using to defend Anna Richardson, and perhaps Mark Briscoe will also be using it to defend Miguel de Leon. These are the homeless musicians that face 15 days in jail, 240 hours of community service, and thousands of dollars in fines for the crime of sleeping outside in the downtown area in Santa Cruz. And we'll be talking about that tomorrow morning, and a judge will be ruling on that. Judge Volkman in Department 4 at 9 o'clock, that's when the hearing is scheduled to begin. So I invite you to come on down and hear that. Let me see if I have anything that I can actually... I was going to just read a little bit from it, and I think I will try to do that. Let's see if we can get in that position. In case you want to call in, again, the call-in number is 427-3772. And you can also read about this online, Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, and it's in the calendar at the top of the page. The story is Jail for Sleep Hearing for Two Homeless Musicians, and you can also see some of the legal papers there, which have been posted, and thanks to Uncle Rick for posting them, or posting some of them, and I posted some other ones. Here's the some of the language from the document that is being filed on behalf of Anna Richardson and Miguel de Leon. And here's what he says. Anna Galen Richardson and Miguel de Leon are residents of Santa Cruz County, and specifically the city of Santa Cruz. Defendants have been homeless in the city of Santa Cruz for approximately 15 years. Due to facts beyond defendants' control, they are often required to sleep outside. One of the main factors causing the circumstance is the fact that the city of Santa Cruz cannot support the majority of its homeless population in its homeless shelters. On May 9, 2009, Honorable Paul Burdick, and how honorable he is, given his decision here, issued a preliminary injunction forbidding defendants from violating Santa Cruz Municipal Code 6.36010 in specific areas of downtown Santa Cruz. That's the sleeping ban, the blanket ban, and the daytime-nighttime camping ban. Despite the order from Judge Burdick, defendants remain homeless citizens of Santa Cruz, which still requires them to sleep outside. On December 4, 2010, Ms. Richardson served a request for the production of documents on the city attorney's office. The city attorney agreed to produce the responsive documents. However, counsel only received about 1,000 pages of documents on March 5, 2010, and will be unable to incorporate them into this memorandum. A trial date was set in this case on the permanent injunction on June 14th, 3 months down the road, at which point defendants expect a full and fair opportunity to present their case. But, of course, they're going to try to jail them tomorrow, 3 months before the permanent injunction hearing. Prior to disclosing the requested discovery and prior to the trial, the Santa Cruz City Attorney brought an ex parte motion to show cause, thus short-circuiting, that's the hearing tomorrow, defendants' attempts to fully defend themselves prior to punishment, such as jail being levied against them. In essence, by pushing this contempt proceeding where the court will have to determine the legality of the injunction, it appears the city attorney seeks to have a mini-trial on the propriety of the injunction that would normally be held June 14, 2010, where the full trial is set. Then there are a whole series of legal arguments, which you can look online and check out, claiming that I think properly claiming that the defendants are being denied their due process rights. That is to say, they're not being given a real trial on any of these charges. They're being given a hearing, which is a civil process with a different standard in terms of, I believe it's still beyond a reasonable doubt, but there's no attorney appointed by the city, a public defender for these folks, no appeals that are allowed from the contempt hearing. And it's an interesting document to look over. I'm realizing I don't have time in the next 10 minutes to go through the detailed specifics, which are interesting. And hopefully you can hear Jonathan Gettleman talk about them in more detail tomorrow in front of the courthouse at 8:30 when he said he's coming on down to maybe break bread with us and also hopefully, break the sleeping ban on these defendants, or at least stop their being jailed for the crime of sleeping, which is really the substantive issue here in this hearing. Because this is an attempt to intimidate the whole homeless population of Santa Cruz based upon the privileges and the sense of privilege of the merchants and the property owners and the some residents downtown who don't like the idea or the experience of having homeless people sleeping in those areas, even though there's no legal place in Santa Cruz for 95% of the homeless population to sleep tonight. And this extends to their being present in these areas during the day, hence all the forbidden zones that have been created, hence all the over-policing that's happening, and indeed hence this injunction hearing, which is being used instead of the regular criminal process, which would require taking these folks into court, taking them to trial, proving beyond a reasonable doubt that they're violating laws that are constitutional. That isn't being done. So I really encourage folks to come down and watch this process very, very closely. You can also contact Mayor Mike Rotkin and suggest to him as a council member and as the mayor of the city, this is a disgraceful attempt to criminalize poor people in a town that has no legal shelter for the overwhelming majority of homeless people, as I said before, and therefore is in no business even considering doing this, much less trying to zip through a quick process, which is what is going on. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, hello. Yeah, I'd like to make a comment about the medical marijuana issue.
Sure. What's your name, caller?
Yeah, my name is Bruce.
Go ahead, Bruce.
Hold on a second. Let me turn off the radio
for
the moment. Okay.
Sorry, I should have reminded folks. Always turn down your radio. We've got this delay here.
Okay.
We get confused. So.
Much better. Okay, so I first wanted to mention that everybody should check out the Rick Simpson videos if you haven't had a chance to do that on YouTube.
How can they find those videos?
You can find those at phoenixtears.ca.
Run that by me one more time.
HTTP, phoenixtears.ca, Canada.
Phoenix Tears, like T-E-A-R-S?
Yes.
Dot Canada.
Yeah. Yeah. Rick okay. has been working with what he calls hemp oil, which is solvent-reduced hemp flower or marijuana oil. For over 10 years, and he has personally treated or helped provided medicine to over 1,500 people.
Now, how is this related to the Medical Marijuana Club ban? What's your...
Well, the thing is, at this point, people do not realize the health potential of hemp.
Well, that's true, but all these folks are saying, oh, we're great fans of medical marijuana. We just have enough clubs in town. That's all they're saying. We don't need any more because all these people are going to come to town and these hopheads are going to come to town and everything's being handled by the two clubs that exist.
Well, they have an idea that they have the right to regulate this, but actually in a republic, which is supposedly what we're living in, you don't have the right as a government to do anything that one person can't do to another.
Well, I understand this is a libertarian theory. The question, though, is you don't favor the right then to regulate pharmacies or hospitals or anything else, right?
Well, under common law, if anybody does any harm, they are liable.
Yeah, but you answer my question. You don't favor any government regulation of any of these bodies.
If you can demonstrate that you're preventing immediate harm, I think that is valid, but you have to demonstrate that.
Well, you know,
you can't have a legislature that just passes dozens of laws.
This is a theoretical argument which we could spend a lot of time on, but I've got 5 minutes left in the show.
Right.
But I take it you oppose the city council's attempt to ban new medical marijuana dispensaries.
I don't think that they have jurisdiction in the least.
Are you prepared to give a call to the city council at 420-5023, I believe. I'll get the exact number for you. Keep listening. Because that's what I'm encouraging people to do is call in, although, frankly, when they made up their minds, it takes great numbers to change them. So.
Well, yeah, it's not clear that there's a real possibility of changing them in this time frame, and yet this is a long process, and it certainly seems like things are moving in the direction of making people able to access their medication.
Well, no. It looks like it's moving in the other direction because they're blocking. This whole legislation is designed to stop people from accessing medication except through the two existing clubs.
Well, that's the situation at the moment, but just because they passed this ordinance doesn't mean that this is written in stone for the unforeseeable future.
Well, you know, people have a chance to do something right now before Tuesday in the final passage. You know, whether this means, you know,
I'll call the city council and I'll go down to the meeting. I have no problem with that.
Oh, that's great. I don't know what I'm going to be doing on Tuesday night. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to have, you know, I mean, I usually write about it and babble about it on the radio, maybe make a letter or two to Rotkin that I don't, you know, and sometimes I show up at the meeting. 420-5023 is the number to call. 420. If you want to talk to the whole city council, 420-5020. 420-5020 is the number to call. Anything else, Bruce, you want to say before I roll on you?
No, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. And, you know, I'm afraid we're going to have to wind it up here. I apologize to listeners who wanted to hear more interviews. I'm one of them. I'd like to have heard. God, I've got hours of interviews that I want to and need to play. I'll be back on Sunday unless I get perhaps kidnapped by a gang of celestial angels, which might be interesting. And I'll be down there tomorrow in front of the city court, I should say the county court, on Water Street, 701 Ocean. Is it Ocean and Water, for those of you who don't know where the courts are? Chowing down, having breakfast, hopefully talking to folks, hopefully hearing folks who are expressing their concerns. And I'll be playing some of the tape from that session on Sunday. The court will be in session starting at 9 o'clock, and we'll all be filing into the court to show, some of us anyway, for show our support for the right of people who are homeless not to be harassed, arrested, civilly persecuted for doing what they need to do every night, which is to sleep. Not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere. So I encourage people to do the same. If you have questions about anything you've heard on the air, you can give me a call on the Huff Line, 423-4833. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And it's mostly a voicemail, but you may catch me in. It's a possibility. If you don't, I will call you back. I'll be playing some more of this horseshit city council meeting on Sunday, probably around 10. I don't know. There's probably better things to play, but you know, we began this stuff, so I guess we should end it as well. But again, you have an option yourself to go to city council. You have an option to call Rotkin and say, this is, you know, it's outrageous, this measure is being pressed. You need to have another moratorium so people can actually get real stats. How many medical marijuana patients are there in the city of Santa Cruz? There have been no figures, in spite of the, you know, 10-month dilly-dallying of the Planning Commission and the Planning Department. We don't know diddly-squat about this. And Uncle Dennis here is not a very good shot as he tries to throw paper into the garbage can. I'm not even going to get into this. So, but he is coming up, and actually there's also a benefit coming up, which I'm sure Uncle Dennis will talk about at great length, or some length perhaps, and, as well as acquainting you with his most recent ale activities, or in a certain sense, what ails him. Sorry. The puns. Anyway, thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Come on down to the courthouse tomorrow. Give me a call at 423-4833. Comment again on Sunday. And, you know, you'll get more of the same if that's what you like. Thanks for being with me on this edition of the Bathrob Spears Broadside. And I think we actually have a little... do we have a disc here? You got a disc, Dennis?
I'm working on it, Robert.
He's struggling to put some of his archaic 60s and 70s music on.
Well, that's a Moby Grape.
Moby Grape. It sounds like some kind of a fruit drink.
Yeah.
I guess they were a rock group of the old days.
Number three.
All right, so thanks again, and talk to you later.
Let's see here. Do that, do this, then I can actually hear myself. And Robert's hanging out. We're going to see you on Sunday at the meeting, Robert?
Well, if the booty is big enough, I will.
That's the party. The booty is at the party.
Oh, okay. Well, then we'll see.
Okay. Robert will be back Sunday morning for y'all. And then for for our meeting, anyway, we are having a birthday party, and that's going to be Saturday, March 27th at 7. All right, so doors open at 6. The entertainment starts at 7 down at the Cumbois Jazz Center at 302 Cedar Street in Santa Cruz. We're going to have some birthday cake. We're going to have a raffle for pirate booty. We're going to, if we encourage you to come dressed up as a pirate. And we will give the best pirate costume a prize. And we're going to have lots of music. We have three bands, big bands, and some smaller groups. Our big band, Superior Olive, rock and roll group, been playing around here for a while. Kind of a folksy band called Sweet Jam. They'll be playing for us. We also have members of the Barbara Lopez group, which will be singing. I'm not sure two or three or how many of those will be there. We're getting a line on Spanish music band, not sure Cuban salsa band, or at least part of a Cuban salsa band. Not sure. They had a name, but I spaced it. We're working on that. Correlation, one of our programmers here named Coral, has a couple of people who are going to sing in with her. DJ Soup, who has a show on Sunday evenings, will have a couple of friends doing some hip-hop. Robert Norris will be doing a naked pole dance.
Oh.
No, that's all. That's not going to happen.
Naked Ukrainian dance.
Naked Ukrainian dance. He was just back in the studio here harassing me, so I thought I'd harass him on the way out the door. Let's see. R-Duck, who has a show on Friday evenings, will be putting on a little electronica for you. And yours truly, Uncle Dennis, will be playing a few folk songs on the guitar. So what can I say? There's a whole lot of fun going to be had, and you can be a part of it. All you have to do is make a donation at the door. If your donation is more than $10, we'll give you 2 raffle tickets for every dollar over 10 that you contribute at the door. So there's kind of an incentive there to get those 2-for-1 raffle tickets by making that donation at the door. So there's all that. In addition to that, you will be able to get food and drinks at the Kumbwa. They have a nice kitchen there. They'll be offering snacks, they call them. They will be available. And in addition to that, we will have birthday cake for you. So all that taking place Saturday, March 27th, a week from this Saturday, at the Kumbwa Jazz Center, 302 Cedar Street here in Santa Cruz. I certainly hope y'all can attend, because it's going to be a whole lot of fun. And right now we're going to play some Doors for you, live off their rare and unpublished album.
I will never be untrue. Do anything you want me to. Never stay out drinking. No. Tell you all the people, all the places I have been. Thank you.
get mad. 'Cause if you do, you're gonna lose the best friend that you ever had. That's no lie.